Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of October 2020. I'm your host Robert, and Jesus goddamn Christ, this month did not let up. And with me I have...
It was the month that would never end. I'm talking, of course, about March. It's still March somehow, which is weird because the calendar says November.
And... as you can tell, we've been a bit overwhelmed this month, possibly, just everywhere, in every conceivable way. I don't even think we have time for a proper preamble or anything. There's just a lot of shit here.
Yeah, it was another July.
We didn't even have to take a month off, so like, what the hell? But we can't waste any more time, so let's actually get things started. As always, starting off with what the hell actually did come out during October 2020. Some of the more notable releases, of course, starting off in the realm of rock, indie, punk, etc. There was a new Bon Jovi project, apparently, called 2020. There was a new Blue Oyster Cult album, The Symbol Remains. The most misunderstood artist among conservative music listeners everywhere, Bruce Springsteen, The Boss, with a new album, Letter to You. Biba Doobie, that chick you might know from that one TikTok hit with her debut album, Fake It Flowers. Shoegazers Nothing with their newest album, The Great Dismal. A surprise drop from Mr. Sturgill Simpson, Cuttin' Grass Volume 1, The Butcher Shop Sessions. Mr. Simpson going into bluegrass territory. Of course, Noise Rockers Metz with their new album Atlas Vending. And rounding out the trifecta of Maynard James Keenan-fronted projects, we have the newest album from Pucifer with Existential Reckoning. Now moving on to the realm of metal hardcore, there was a new Amaranth album, Manifest. There was the new Annul Nothrok project, Endarkenment. Devil Driver dropping part 1 of Dealing with Demons. 6 Feet Under with their newest album, Nightmares of the Decomposed. Like Moss to Flame, a metalcore band I thought we all forgot about 5 years ago, with No Eternity in Gold. Mr. Bungle, the Mike Patton project with their newest album, The Raging Wrath of the Easter Bunny Demo. Of course, Paul Bearer with their newest album, Forgotten Days. Sumac with their new album, May You Be Held. Health with Disco 4 Part 1. Emma Ruth Rundle and Thou dropping a collaborative album, May Our Chambers Be Full. Screamo Act Touche Amore with their newest album Lament. New Metalers Seven Dust with Blood and Stone. Fevered 333 with a new EP Wrong Generation. Zeal and Ardor with a new EP themselves called Wake of a Nation. Bring Me the Horizon dropping part one of their post-human album series Survival Horror. Marty Friedman with his newest solo album Tokyo Jukebox 3. Dillinger Escape Plan frontman Greg Pucciato with his debut solo full-length Child Soldier Creator of God. And of course, Mr. Corey Taylor with his debut solo full-length CMFT. Now in the realm of hip-hop and R&B, we have the newest album from Benny the Butcher with Burn Proof. The new West Side Gun album, Who Made the Sunshine. We had two new projects, courtesy of The Alchemist, with A Doctor, A Painter, and An Alchemist Walk Into a Bar, and The Food Villain. Top Dog member Reason, with their debut album, New Beginnings. Homeboy Sandman, with the new album, Don't Feed the Monster. Metal-based rapper Ghostmane, with his newest album, Anti-Icon. There was a new Mario EP called Closer to Mars. There was Welcome to O-Block, the debut full-length of the unfortunately now-deceased rapper King Von. There was a new Famous Dex album, Diana, a new Trippy Red project called Pegasus, Blockboy JB with his new album, Fat Boy, Made in TYO with Never Forgotten, a new EP from Joyner Lucas called Evolution, Ty Dolla $ign with a new collaborative album featuring Common with A Beautiful Revolution Part 1, YG with his new album My Life 400, T.I. with The Libra, Trey Songz had a new album called Back Home, of course there was the new Busta Rhymes album, Extinction Level Event 2, The Wrath of God, 21 Savage and Metro Boomin linking back up for Savage Mode 2, Open Mike Eagle with his newest project Anime, Trauma, and Divorce, and of course Clipping with their newest album, Visions of Bodies Being Burned. Now in the realm of pop, electronic, and other, there was a new 10 Tricks Point Never project, Magic 10 Tricks Point Never. We had two new albums courtesy of electronic duo Autechre with Sign and Plus. There was the new Machine Drum album, A View of You. Mr. Mark Rebillet with Loop Daddy 3. There was a new John Frusciante solo album, Maya. Megan Trainor with A Very Trainor Christmas, a.k.a. Why. There was a new Major Lazer album, Music is the Weapon. There was a new album from Blackpink with The Album. Sam Smith dropped a new project called Love Goes. Gorillaz came out with Song Machine Season 1 Strange Times. And of course, Ariana Grande with her newest album, Positions. So yeah, quite a lot happening, quite a lot high profile, so let's not waste any time getting started. Alex, what the hell were you listening to this past month?
Well, about only half of what I intended to, because there was just too much stuff going on. Of that half, I have 10 albums that I have sort of a Fimi-style notation thing going for me. Words are hard. Words are very hard. Before I start, though, I want to send my condolences to Nav. He's okay, it's just, when you get 4 not goods in a row, that's when you call it a career.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Goodness gracious. Like, at least the weekend is a very fruitful Canadian going on the up and up. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, so of my assortment of releases here, I have 10 albums / EPs / things that I will go into very short details for, because we don't want to spend a whole lot of time around here, so I'll just work my way up, starting with this new Corey Taylor project, CMFT. And is it wrong for me to say I wanted to like this more than I did?
Honestly, kind of low-key my reaction, too.
Yeah, it's just too much twangy dad rock on this album.
That seems to be something that it happens more often than it should with, like, solo releases like this.
I mean, the title track, kind of, and Culturehead, those are some good tracks on there, but everything else just has that sort of very twangy Midwestern bar dad rock vibe to it that I'm not totally feeling. Basically, this needed more rap features on here is what I'm trying to say. Because, yeah, all that dad rock is just, Okay, so, yeah, that's a lot to say about that. That's going to be my theme for this whole thing. Very short notes. Up here, next in my list, is a short EP from a Japanese artist, Uru, Break Furiko. If that name sounds familiar to some of you out there, Break is the ending theme to Yashahime. Which, yes, it's a very solid track that serves well as the ending theme, and the other tracks in this EP are pretty solid as well. It has a very strong piano pop vibe to it, with a little bit of synthetic modern Western pop flares. Makes for a very great atmospheric listen, if only a little short. It's only 4 tracks on here with 2 instrumentals.
Wouldn't be you without working in an Inuyasha reference now, wouldn't it?
That's my brand. It's what y'all expect from me. And flowing into the pop realm. Oh, Ari. So yeah, this Ariana Grande album, Positions. Last time around, she came out and released a very late 90s pop style album with the Max Martin touch. And here we have much more of a sultry R&B style to those tracks. And by sultry, I mean late-night adult pay-per-view or Cinemax at 3 a.m.
Oh.
This is a sex album.
Oh.
So that's what she means by positions.
Yeah, that's what she means by positions. Along with the track 34 plus 35. You can do the math.
Nice.
Yeah, it is absolutely it's a very sex-positive kind of sex album, which is good. We need more of that in the pop scene. So, yeah. Honestly, Thank You Next was better. It felt more rounded and more and just stronger. This album feels like it's trying to appease a newly cultivated niche audience within the pre-existing Ariana Grande fan base. And we have features here, and in terms of features, The Weeknd, great. Doja Cat, not great. Ty Dolla $ign, eh.
Kind of expected that.
Yeah. And more than anything, this album might be a big example of, as Crash Thompson would say, the problem. Because you can tell there's a definite style that's being honed in on that we've kind of heard before. And you can tell which tracks are instant radio hits and which are here just to fill out a whole album order. I'm expecting the track Off the Table with The Weeknd to hit radio any day now. You know, as long as that album bomb, you know, treks upward on the Hot 100. But tracks like West Side and Obvious, they feel like album filler, which is not good. Like, we don't need pop albums to be 14 songs long nowadays. We really don't. Them's the breaks, I guess. Okay. Next up here, we're going deeper into the rock scene. With my first proper dive into Bring Me the Horizon. Post-human survival horror. Whether it's going to be an EP or a half album or whatever, it's good. It's a good, solid 6.5, maybe 7 out of 10 album, quote unquote. It doesn't veer too far off. It has a very aggressive, guitar-driven edge to it. Thank you, Mick Gordon. That Obey track is still garbage. And I do have to correct myself from an attempted joke I made a couple weeks ago when we mentioned in a festival lineup, Yellow Wolf. I made a joke saying that he's Mr. Halsey. I got him mixed up with Youngblood because they both have 8 letters in their name and they both start with Y. And honestly, it's Yellow Wolf. Who cares? Yeah. Obey, still garbage. Parasite Eve, still pretty solid. Kingslayer, featuring Baby Metal, might be the most surprising track I've heard in a long time. I never thought I'd hear Baby Metal involved in a track where Ollie is just screaming fuck over and over as a musical highlight of the year for me. But, see, I guess stranger things have happened in this kooky year of ours.
Just remember, Baby Metal makes everything better.
Even Bring Me the Horizon. Now to get to actual talent, though. Fever 333, Wrong Generation. The best way I can describe this, it's a very short and sweet burst of the saying, fuck around and find out.
Excellent.
Now that's all I have to say. It's 19 minutes of raw, untethered, harsh, aggressive goodness. Which is especially good to hear, you know, now that we're in transition to, hopefully, our escape from this fuckscape of an apocalypse.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, because we can't trust these fucking people. But we'll get there in due time. Okay. Now to get into some rather lesser-known projects. First, the debut album, I think, from King Mothership. Basically, what if Spencer and Matt from Periphery did A Day to Remember better than A Day to Remember?
Well, that's not a high bar to clear, but go on.
It's an album that has a very strong pop-punk vibe throughout with a little bit of an emo MCR spin and some avant-garde arty metal sprinkled throughout. You know, a bit of a blend between the stripped-down core style arrangement with a more theatrical flair sprinkled in every now and then. Kind of like with what the Alamart is dictating. It's art. You know, good art, not like that terrible art in Spain, which, how does it happen again? Come on. You'd think we'd learn by now.
You'd think, but remember, the human race.
Yeah. The closing track on here is a worthy standout, I Stand Alone. It's a rather lengthy, sort of froggish metal banger, and it features Pelini, who, speaking of, hey, Doja Cat, what the fuck?
Oh, yeah, right, that did happen.
Yeah.
What?
There was an uncleared sampling of a Pelini track during Doja Cat's performance at the MTV EMAs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, who do you that's a lot more problematic shit for her.
I mean, doing uncleared samples of another person's music? Who do you think you are, Doja Cat? Twitch? But then again, Twitch doesn't want to pay out anyone anything because, you know, even though they're owned by Amazon, they just don't want to do anything for that, so, yeah, whatever.
Bezos.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Okay. And now we get to go to a double shot of albums that feature singers that Rob does not like.
Oh.
First, the debut album from Falsettes, We Follow or Lead the Way. You might recall I mentioned this band a little while ago, as James LaBrie of Dream Theater, his son Chance LaBrie, plays drums in this band.
Oh god, right.
Yeah. And hearing the whole album, yeah, it's pretty solid. It's pretty solid baseline. Sometimes you just want to take things a bit simple, and this band and album is just that. Baseline core across the board, like a solid steak and some potatoes. Nothing too fancy, nothing too outlandish. Just the right middle-of-the-road sweet spots. For me, anyway. But then again, I'm an enigma. Same can be said for this other band, Tala, who also features a Dream Theater alum's son in the band playing drums.
Oh, God.
Max Portnoy.
I just remembered.
God, yes,
that song
Tala
is still so bad.
Well, what if I told you that was more of an outlier?
I don't believe you. I feel like this is a trick.
Well, anyway, their debut album, Matrophagy, I probably said that wrong, is out. And yeah, enter the modern nu metal revival. But unlike a band like Code Orange, I can actually get into their weird Korn, Slipknot, Sepultura, early Suicide Silence fusion stick. That's the thing about their singer. He's trying to sound like Mitch Lucker, Jonathan Davis, Corey Taylor, and Max Cavalera all at the same time. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, God. How could that actually work?
It's just, maybe it's just how everything is mixed and engineered, because the guitars are very harsh and punchy. The drums are rather bright. I don't know if that's the right term, but there's a lot of crack to the drums that just makes it sound a lot brighter. But if you like some super aggressive, kind of scary, modernish new metal, give it a listen. Or, you know, do it just to piss off Rob because he hates the way their singer sounds.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
I tease because I want to. But I have two rather notable standouts here, both of which have to do with my incessant habit of listening to the same things over and over and over again, because I am a very sad, pathetic human who just wants to survive in life. Starting with the latest live album from one Mr. Devin Townsend, Order of Magnitude, Empath, Volume 1. Do know, I've only heard it. I haven't seen the full concert because trying to find the Blu-ray pack-in bundle is a little hard around here.
Aw, oh, man.
Yeah. It is a little unfortunate. But, you know, that's what you have to do when you're dealing with a lesser-known artist in a major metropolitan area. Anyway, Devin Townsend. I was planning to see him live earlier in the year before everything happened. I bowed out of going to that concert because I wasn't feeling well. Whether or not I actually had it is still up in the air. It's not outside the realm of possibility. I could have had it and just never known, but, you know. Gotta take care of number one, first of all. So, yeah. Mr. Heavy Devi has been having a busy year, doing quarantine concerts, watching a podcast, talking about all his albums, planning a new album, maybe for release sometime next year.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, along with, you know, The Moth and the musical about the penis.
Fingers crossed!
And that new Casualty is a cool record.
Oh yeah, that's happening too.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we have a live album recorded, where else? In London. Because four of his last five live albums have been released, have been recorded in London. We have By a Thread, London. The Retinal Circus, London. Ziltoid, Royal Albert Hall, London. The only one that wasn't was the Ocean Machine concert in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. Lucky Brits, you all get the good concerts around here, around there. Wish we had those. And surrounding Mr. Townsend as his band to perform in a very ultra-live setting with no backing tracks or clicks, we have on bass one Nathan Navarro, who you might know from the YouTube channel Nathan Navarro. On drums, we have one Morgan Agren, a very acclaimed drummer with a very interesting setup and drumming style. On guitar, we have both Marcus Reuter and Mike Keneally, very acclaimed guitarists in their own right. A trio of vocalists led by one Che Amy Dorval, who you all know from the Casualties of Cool album. All amassed together for a very fantastic, fun evening that's less metal-oriented and more atmospheric rock-oriented. When four of the tracks are from the Key album, that's when you know you're going to get a very, very interesting concert. Though there are no Strapping on Lad covers in here, which, funny story, at the show here in the city earlier in the year, they did perform Love with an interesting setup on stage with teddy bears by the drum riser and children on the stage with them.
Oh.
Yeah, like little 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. So that way they wouldn't get hurt while being in the crowd.
Hmm.
Just imagine that song with children. You're welcome. Yeah, it's a very fun concert. Hopefully I'll be able to see it in its full glory, not just out of YouTube clips. And for the hell of it, there's also a cover of Disco Inferno on here.
Oh.
Yes, that Disco Inferno song. Because why not? It's a big old hootenanny of a Halloween party. Of a Halloween... No, that was a couple weeks ago. Hootenanny of a Hawaiian-themed party. The Halloween party was something else. But that was pretty cool. Now wait for the Christmas party to happen. And there is one more thing I have here in my list. It was a box that I got earlier in the month because I just had to, you know, get my hands on it. The 20th anniversary box set re-release of Linkin Park's debut album, Hybrid Theory.
Ah, yes. Excellent.
Yes. Honestly, I don't know what else I can say about Hybrid Theory that people have already said 100 times over. It sold like 417 million copies in a month back in 2000 or whatever the total was. It sold like gangbusters. It had legs. Everybody knows in the end. Though for my money, the back-to-back shot of a place in my head and forgotten. Heavy as a motherfucker in terms of banger status. there's more to it than just the album as well. There is also the remix album that came out a couple years later, Reanimation, which is very fantastic, with a blend of rock and rap combining with electronic to make a very interesting musical approach, because you have artists like Kali Tuna, Pharoah March, Phoenix Orion joining in to do some guest verses, and you have guest musicians like Jonathan Davis, Stephen Richards. Oh, and we also have this guy, Steph Carpenter. I wonder what he's been up to. Oh, God damn it, Steph. Why did you have to get infected with the brain worms?
My God.
Well, I guess we should learn to expect a lot less from our heroes nowadays.
Unfortunately.
Anyway, this box also has some fantastic supplemental material, namely in the form of old demos, which are always fun to listen to, B-sides, like the tracks High Voltage and My December. I wish those were part of the vinyl album, because My December is a great song and more people need to hear it. Yeah. There's also, for the first time on vinyl, I think anywhere, the original Hybrid Theory demo, which shows what the band could have been had they gone with their original musical style. They would have been a lot less interesting if they kept to that style. My God.
Wow.
Yeah. It doesn't have that same rawness that their album sound would have on the demo. That's all I'm going to say about that. And there's also some DVDs as well, namely a re-release of their DVD Frat Party at Pancake Festival. Yes, that's really what it's called. A nice tour supplement. And also two complete pro shots. A pro shot of their 2001 Rock Am Ring performance, courtesy of Rock Palast, fantastic show in Germany. And a previously unreleased DVD of their Project Revolution 2002 tour, which I'm wondering how long they kept that in the bin for, if they held on to it all these years and never released it. Oh well. Yeah, it's just a fantastic box set filled with a whole bunch of goodies, B-sides, LPU exclusive tracks, like live tracks, and just a whole bunch of goodies. This is the stuff I like. It's cool to have as a collector, and it's doubly cool to have for, you know, being a big fan of the band and especially this album. Here's hoping I can get that double vinyl reissue of Meteora later in the month, because I really want that one. Hands of Fate, do not screw me over. And just to round things out, for all the stuff I couldn't get around to, but we'll probably have more to say, maybe if they're good enough to make it in the year-end list. The albums from John Frusciante, Busta Rhymes, Zillow and Ardor, Health, Pustifer, Open Mike Eagle, Clipping, Paul Bearer, Greg Puciato, and Mr. Bungle. Why did everyone have to release everything in October? My God.
Probably reaching for one last opportunity for those year-end best of lists.
Yeah. Clearly. Oh, what a month.
Yeah. So anyway, if that finishes up all your stuff, we can move on to the next part of the podcast, where Mark digs through his musical pile.
And yes, and I guess since I may be in the middle part, I got the middle amount of albums I listened to. About 16. I would have been more, except I couldn't get most of them in time. Like, the Busta Rhymes album, I didn't get through it in time. Sorry, I wanted to, but shit got in the way. The recent album, I didn't get to either. I wanted to, but I just didn't have the energy for it. I don't know. I guess I could have done, considering that's the only Top Dog project released this year. Which, they have not released much this year. But you know who has released as much this year? And guess what time that is?
Let me see. Times is. Oh yeah, Griselda.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, round. I don't know. It's another time with Griselda albums that came out this month, and we got well, thankfully two. But we got one that actually was a surprise, or at least one that I didn't know until they got released. Bane the Butcher actually has an album out this year with Burn the Proof. A bit different from the other one, considering this one is entirely produced by Hit-Boy, who's just been making waves this year. Like, he's been doing some projects for Nas, it was stuff for Big Sean. Basically, he's like one of those, like, those big, I don't say big, but more of somebody who's more mainstream-wise. Like, this is like somebody that has more of that, I want to say, you know, mainstream touch, but you think that means, oh, Benny might go mainstream, but here this album is like, no, it's not like that at all. Like, you still get the Grammy shit, but more kind of cleaner, more kind of like crisp and clean, kind of like Pusha T's album Daytona, where it's like all talking things is still there, you get it there, but the beats just sound like very more luxurious, more cleaner, like that is the sort of album. And why you still everybody still get the whole, you know, the whole coke talk type of shit? Benny does get a lot of introspective every talk about, like, basically, like, you know, the whole thing of how we get famous where you make in the game, and how success is everything in your life for better or worse, and you know how money can change you, everything, you know, that shit, and how, like, in New Streets, this talk about how rappers speak about the streets, like, but it's more feels and more luxurious aspect, but not about the consequences, like, you know, like prison or paranoia, running from losses, and basically all PTSD from, you know, from street life, which, yeah, it's a real thing that could happen. It's like he does get those interesting points, like, especially when we talk about his late brother Sheen Gunn, with we talk about his how like his nephew, like his nephew, talking about he has his dad's eyes, like. He's like, man, how can I look at you when I remember my dead brother? Like, that type of shit, which I could get with. I like that. Like, this album just still has all the shit you know from any Griselda, other type of shit. And it has a for that Benny, like, out of all the groups, like, out of all the rappers in there, Benny is the strongest when it comes to his movie. When his ball, he does have a good, strong pen game. Like, what's saying to a nigga like me, you think, because I'm a cooking area stink, I cover bougie bitch, but I put a project bitch in the mink, so street niggas, we gonna fuck the first day we wink. Okay, this one day, I'm Chris, you're a short rocker, two Glock wearer, old rapper, they would have died in the Tupac era, I talk in 98 drug money, shoebox era, I proved my point once, and every take the proof got clearer, y'all niggas make threats, we pay killers, we take bets, fuck with us, and like dope, you can't stretch. He's strong here. He really brought his, you know, his good points to him. NPC guy, they do good here too. Like Freddie Gibbs, like him and Freddie Gibbs, always a winner on a one-way fight. Which I thought Freddie would just do the hook and that's it, but Freddie did deliver on that. Let's see, also got the great 3-man round with War Paint with Conway Westside Gunn, which alright, is that a good joint? Which Gunn's on the hook, which I expect. And Conway got a damn good guest verse, how he talked about how he shook Beyonce's hand at a Rock Nation party once, and how we talked to his girls, like, it made her bring, you know, happy tears, like, okay, like, oh, that's nice, that's fucking nice, that's real good. And you're right, and obviously got are kind of okay, too. Like, the Rick Ross guest verse on Where Would I Go, which is good, too, is a symbol of, you know, Rick Ross being good on another rapper's level, another rapper's song, which has more street, and like I said, timeless. What you got, Big Sean, and the now single Lil Wayne, for a reason. You do realize that the one time I talk good about you, now you do this shit. But yeah, like I said, the verse are good too. I will say the only one I was feeling was Duncan's hooks on Over the Limit. You know, the 8th production is kind of good. It didn't jar me that much. At least it didn't wow me that much. Like, overall, the album is really good. Like, it did what it needed to do. Like, it has one of those early soulful, those early 90s sounding soulful productions from Hit-Boy, which again, he still kept the street narrative there. It's just, you know, just more cleaned up, which it's still good. Like, it is one of the different Griselda type of Griselda projects coming out this year, which has a different type of sound, because they always use same producers, which I like, but yeah, it's something different, which, alright, I could see maybe be able to list, but yeah, it's still a good listen. I say it's worth checking out. And now the other Griselda album, which we have West Side Gun and Who Made the Sunshine, which I confused because I thought it was called Here Comes the Sunshine, because I don't know, it's called Sunshine. I don't know. The title confuses me for a bit. Anyway, yes, he got another project out because I don't know, fuck, he has made more projects. And considering it's also the first one that's on Shady Interscope, which that surprises me. Like it's on like some that label or they did this before, but yeah. Yeah, it's a good, you know, it's a short list of, you know, 11 tracks, 40 minutes, which I'll say that it's better than Fly God 2, but I still like Paper Paris more. Like, okay, here's the thing. I love West Side Gun, I do. I will say in this process, he does feel more like a feature in his own record, like in the song All Praises with Boney James and Jadakiss. Gun just does a hook, but Boney James and Jadakiss just got four verses, which I like. I like Boney James' verse in that, and like Jadakiss' verse as well, but West Side Gun just feel like an afterthought. Like, the hook is alright, the hook is good, but it's like, alright, I mean, he's there, and again, I like the Alchemist production on it, which I gotta say, we actually got the Alchemist watermark back, where he goes, ah, Alchemist, like, oh, I am mishearing that sound. I have not heard that sound in a while. I missed that watermark. And then this one track that I kind of both love and hate, because the more I think about it, the more it's like, oh my god. It's this track, Liz Loves Luger, featuring Armani Caesar. And I'll say this, the production's good. Alchemist made it, so you know why I love it. Armani sings, and she's really good in this. And I gotta say, it sounds so crisp and lovely. It sounds like, can I describe this song? It's like being an ice cream sundae, which you got ice cream, hot fudge, all the toppings you want, which is like, oh, it sounds so good. And then somebody just dumps pickles in it. The pickles being West Side Gun. And just like, oh boy. And I'm gonna say this. Well, he sounds super horny. Like, kind of like, he needs the horny police on, like, it's like, you look at the lyrics to Liz Loves Luger, you wonder, what the fuck? Because I kind of love and hate this song, because, oh god. Like, there's things to like, and there's things like, okay, damn, man. You wanna fuck, we get it. And there's another joints where you got, like, Ocean Prime with Busta Rhymes and Slick Rick, a name I ain't heard in a long, long while. Well, which, of course, Busta does his thing, and then Slick Rick, if you recognize old 80s or 90s, early 90s hip-hop, you know, it's sort of like this, like, or something like that, but yeah, he does well on here. I will say, the one track, Frank Murphy, the eight-minute track, which, It feels like the instrumental is on a low battery. It's like it's dying, like all of that. It sounds like it's just keep on going. It's like, okay, this sounds like instrumental is just keep going, but it's like, ow, stop shooting. It's like it's being shot, but it's like a phone going on a low battery. You got all these guest verses from people like Stove God Cooks, Flea Lord, Easty Mac, El Camino, and Smoke Dizza on the track, which, okay, there's a lot of motherfuckers on here. And then the closer track, which is really good, too, you get Ace, 90 Savers, produced by legendary Just Blaze, on the Goobie for once, which you got Conway, Benny, and Armani Caesar rapping this time. And yeah, it's all good. But yeah, I'd say, like, out of all the West Side Gun projects this year, and depending, he might release one more for some reason. I don't know. Like, I know. He say he's thinking about retiring. Like after this year, he's retiring because he released so many fucking albums. I guess he's going open. No, like, they just releasing a lot of shit this year. But yeah, this album is it's not bad. It's not bad. I say it's in the middle of what's not good on projects that I like so far. I still say Paper Paris is the best one he made this year. And who knows when that last, why won't that last with that other album, which not be any day now, so fuck it, oh, I know it. But yeah, the album's still good. And now we have what's this? Brand new clipping with Vincent's body being burned. Yes, and I'm gonna say it. I like this more than the last one. I really did like maybe because it kept that shift. I mean, it kept the whole thing full, even though we learned that originally they made so much content for the last album. They thinking maybe we should cut most of this off because they feel like they made too much. Which we got this and we got this and it's really like the spiritual essential of the last album. It was before, like, we talk about how good 96 Death Camel is, which I still think a lot with those rappers came in China when they come in, where they say, who the fuck won war, coming through, killing everything, leave the Chris to the boards. and the thing is, interesting though, is make us the war go down, like, how they produce it, how get more interesting as it goes into the album with Pain Every Day, which the use of, the Charlie Voice Phenomenon, which recorded the middle voice, which we talked about the last time, which was the last time on the Decibel Boost, which we talked about how it did in that 7-8 times on the bass beat, sort of like how Release and Snares did their shit, which, wow, a name I ain't said in a long while. And awesome tracks I noticed that were there from a couple years back, like, do you remember the Adult Swim Noise album? The cut for that Bite for the Pow, that's on this album as well. Okay, there that in a while, and there's also like some weird things that we do, like we introduce like invocation with the use of an E5 tone, which gets the pitch up to the number is 666.0 hertz, which makes a very terrifying tone, which got this weird ambient sound, like a okay that's. That's kind of creepy. Which the Endless do transition well with songs like which lead to 96 Dev Campbell, and even like the final check Secret Piece, which is more of an ambient sound, which based off a clip from Yoko Ono, which like all right, that's a fitting ending track. It's fitting now considering the last one, it wasn't 18 minutes of piano burning. Which is still fine, just 18 fucking minutes of that. But going to more of the album cuts for, like, Check the Lock is fucking amazing. Like, okay, like, that track has the whole thing about a paranoid drug dealer trying to mention that knows some stuff, and that beat just fucking kills it. That bass groove, like, oh shit, that is so good. Like, I repeat that so many times. I'm like, man, this is my favorite track of the album. If you have Look Like Meat, which features Noise Rap Pioneers of Horror, which is spelled H-O-9-9-0-9. Like, damn. Man, this one does not help me. But yeah, that one focuses on more of, cannibalism. Yeah, you know the drill. And I will say, there's a lot of, like, noise elements in this album, which... I say this, if you're not into noise music, you're not gonna be pleased with this. So, in other words, Pitchfork. I mean, they give it a 6. I mean, they gave it a 6 this time, but, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I'm gonna say, I just have really more following with it to it. It's like, it still goes on. It still goes on what they did last time. The V's got top notch lyricism, but that story content which keeps going and keeps me interested. Which again, what I like about the last album, which amped it up more because it's basically the album you want to play every Halloween from now on. Like, you play this and there's this addition of blood, play that and you're playing like a story. Like, yeah, just play those albums. They're great. They're fucking phenomenal. And now we go into Mr. 10 Tricks Point Never. Tune in and to Magic 10 Tricks Point Never to listen to your very eclectic music needs. And I gotta say, it's more of basically what you know from him from his whole career. Like you get bits and pieces of what he did in the past, well, both her career, like, you know, stuff from age of, or R7, or plus 7, or Tone, like, basically, yeah, it's basically, like, bits and most, like, bits and pieces of what his personality did. Like, once I could hear I Don't Love Me Anymore, which he performed on Jimmy Fallon, which, okay, that was weird. Yeah, that was weird, thinking, oh, you're on Jimmy Fallon, okay. Which he said to be a Frankenstein track of bits of pop punk, sight rock, and motoric, but in the wrong song. And I will say, it is a good concept of, you know, of having a radio station like this, or it's just like this. Like, I said before that the auto kicks in with this very, you know, abrupt interchanges and long roll home. Still a favorite track of mine, which I still love. And here's a surprise that some of you kind of expected, but yeah. The track of No Nightmares, which has a vocal feature none other than The Weeknd. Oh, and another thing too, he's the second producer of the circuit as well. So he must have a hand in this shit as well. which kind of explains the whole vibe of this, because No Nightmares does have that very 80s pop ballad atmosphere that, well, that Weeknd's been doing a lot this year. I mean, just look at this album and that one track with Calvin Harris. But yeah, No Nightmares is definitely one that is. No Nightmares is definitely one of those early 80s pop tracks. There's also this one track called The Weather Channel. Get it? But it's weather, but it's spelled with, you know, not like weather, but fucking, you get it. Thing is, like, the first half sounds like the old Wii menu startup music. It's like, okay, this is not pretty what I heard before. And then you get this full on offbeat production in the latter half, which you got this rapper named and no joke, Nolan B. Rowland. Nolan B. Rowland doing these weird verses, and kind of like the offbeat vibe, which got in the previous track before that, which is called Bo Echo, which you should get that. Yeah, you should get that one. And again, it's also like album cuts like Migo is good, and this other one, Lost But Never Alone, which got this. It gave me this early Echo Jams vibe with this sound. Sounds like a lot of 80s synth pop. And speaking of that song, that got a video out now, and guess who directed it?
Oh yeah, the Softy Bros.
Yep. Yep, that connection is still wild. It's still going on. And oh, we get this one track, Shifted, which features some Orca, a name I ain't heard in a long ass while, which got these very generally eerie vibes, which I will say the music does remind me of like something you get from early scores from John Carpenter and Wendy Carlos. And yes, look at the last one name because I have to figure. Oh, that's what the first Tron score. But yeah, I gotta say, this one like, if he, like I say, it the like I say, it's basically like bits and pieces of what he did in his whole career so far. Like, it doesn't say I want to go back to those albums, but I still think it's still a good album to listen to. Like, I still dug the fuck out of it. And now, hopefully shorter cuts. So I'm gonna get two out of the way. The Alchemist, who has two fucking albums projects this month, which frankly short, which he has. This one, a doctor, a painter, and an alchemist walk into a bar. Which, yes, it is short.
What's the punchline? I don't get it.
Okay, I'll say this. It's a short. It's like 17 minutes with 10 songs, one feature being West Side Gun. It's good. I won't say great, but I do like some ones like that track Stained Glass, maybe The Rainforest. And Raised with Life, but yeah, still alright. And you have The Food Villain. And no, I know she's disappointed that no Emma Doom is not on this album. You're disappointed that because you're thinking, oh, Food Villain. Does it mean? No, it don't mean that. Sorry. And this one is alright. I wish I liked it more. I mean, I still like it, but it's like, I still like some parts of it. Like, there's the parts with Action Bronson and Big Body Bear, so they go all out. I hate everything. Whoa. Like, it does remind me of that cooking show. The cook, shit, I forgot.
Fuck, That's Delicious?
Yeah, fuck, That's Delicious. I forgot the name of that show. Damn, yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna get that. But I watched Vice in a while. But yeah, this was just okay too. I think since me being the big Alchemist fan, you figure I would love it, and I like it. It just didn't go. It wasn't like, oh my god, I got played this a million times. It was like, it's cool. It's cool. I still give it a recommend. If you got some time to spare. This one will get out of the way quick because I got. Not gonna say about it. 21 Savage and Metro Boomin with Savage Mode 2. And I know you think last time I talked about this guy a long time ago, and it wasn't great. Now with this album, he has shown improved over the years since Issa. Issa, I mean, I listened to the last time he did the I Am Greater Than I Was. Although I heard it was, you know, not bad. And I can say for here, I can say for here, this was okay. It was okay. It was okay. Like, I will say the most interesting part about this album is, it's Morgan Freeman doing the narration of this album, which I kind of didn't like. It does have, maybe it's a voice that made it work. Like even at the intro and even at this his interlude with Snitches and Rats. Which, when you said, you know, a person, like you know, like, who says was a rat, would just say, a rat is a, like, I like how he always goes, like, a rat is a fucking rat. Like, he goes on about this whole thing, but yeah, like, this album is, it's okay, the production I like is, like, I like the Metro Boomin is here. But Tony was Savage, he, like I said, like, he does talk about, you know, we're going through this life, but, you know, has slightly improved considering he's been to some shit. And even the last few years of his life, he has been through some shit, which okay. I will say there is one of those one track with Mr. Right Now, which, oh yeah, Drake mentioned he did a SZA once, so basically he outed himself for that, which, like, oh boy. And I think it was back in 08, so when she was, I think she was 18 or some shit. I don't know if he asked him some shit like that. Like, okay. But yeah, the song there, like I fuck with songs like, with a Mini Man, Citizen Rats, My Dog, and Said and Done, which is, that's my favorite track of this album. Like, I still, like, yeah, this album is okay. I say if, like, number 21 Savage, throughout the years, and, yeah, and yeah, it's all right. It's pretty all right. It's pretty good. And I got a lot more to go. But yeah, okay, I'm just going quick since I know Rob is to this one. Oh My Eagle and My Charming Divorce. It's an interesting album. I like it. I dug it. I did check like Death Parade and Head Ass Idiot Shinji, which already that came. That came my favorite track of coming in this album, which, okay, that one I forgot all the time. And of course, you got a lot of those references, like, you got, you know, a lot of anime references, some references like Black Mirror, and of course JoJo, because you got two fucking songs that got something with JoJo, with I'm a Joestar and Bukara. I cannot say that fucking name. I know y'all said
that. Bucciarati.
Bucciarati.
The best mother in the entirety of JoJo's.
Yeah.
Arrivederci.
Yes. And we'll say, well, you can say, wow, like, UP 2020 was bad for y'all. Last year was probably not good for him. Which, oh, shit. Which, oh, okay, damn, all right. Which, if you say... Yeah, so yeah, it's a good album. I definitely fuck with this. I definitely recommend it. Okay, and another one that Rob probably might say more on, Health Disco 4 Part 1.
God, I hope there's a part 2.
Yeah, and you think with a good industrial type of shit sound, which type of shit sound, like Health's got that for you, and. Hey, yeah, some tracks I definitely do like. Like, I like the one we did with 100 Gex. All right, and you got tracks that they did before, which we talked about before, like the one they did with Ghost Mane and JPEG Mafia, and Soccer Mommy, which I guess that was a few years back. But yeah, he did some good industrial noise type of shit. Yeah, this the one. Okay, and now the realm we're going for is projects from the label Ninja Tune, because there's that. First off, Machine Drum with A View of You. This shit is banging. You got me. It's a good mix of that. A few electronic sounds. So what do you get a few sweet sound to the nitty-gritty bass of it, like The Relic with Rochelle Jordan, which it's also with this very like Latin instrumental, which sounds like. It starts off slow, but then goes straight action music mode. Where it goes like, vroom, 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 vroom. Like it goes away like that. Like it's like that got a pulse to it. Like same with Star with Monopoly, and Terrell. I cannot say her fucking name. I'm sorry. Nicole, you got King Train with Freddie Gibbs. Still bangs. All tracks like Sleepy Patriot with Tarek and Hammerstein. God, no, fuck, I am bad with names tonight. But yeah, that goes good. And the one track I really got the most listen to is Spin Blocks with Father. Yes, Father. Remember that guy? Yeah. Wow. He's the guy. And I'm like, oh yeah, I like this track from this guy once in a while. Which is like, guess it's that one track I like. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I really do like, although I will say he's more rap singing here rather than rapping. I'm here, and you got good instrumentals in here, which all right. I kind of dig most of the sound. I dig most of the sound in this album, to be honest. I can see this is some stuff you would use to edit, like video game footage and some shit like that. But yeah, still a good album. Next up, we got This one boost that we talked about before on this about boost actress, yeah, the one remember he did a song with Sanfa, which was that one Carmen Desire, it's the album Carmen Desire, yeah, I will say it's the opposite of Machine Drum, where it'd be sort of like it does have sort of like it is more quiet, more atmospheric with some tracks. Although there is one bigger track I'm liking here with act name Aura T09 with Caught Loveless, which I kind of bumped a lot of times. Of course, the track Sanford, or you know, they're good. Like it is a bit more quieter than what I think. But yeah, this one's okay. I can see myself going back to it a couple of times. But yeah, it's fine. I would definitely go back to it a lot. Okay, and this one I'm just gonna get out the way. Let's do a bluegrass album. Still just Simpson Cutting Grass Volume 1 with Shuffling Sessions. And it's a bluegrass album. Look, I don't listen to bluegrass that much, like at all. And it's a weird experience listening to it. I was like, okay. I mean, it's not bad. I can say, all right, it's something you would use if you're cutting grass in a round lawnmower, which I see in the album art, which I think I don't have because I ain't got no big yard, which thank God I don't want no big ass yard. I hate cutting grass in the summer. I guess I say if you need something to cut grass in the wintertime, then damn it, summertime, whenever that comes around, this be an album for you if you want that shit. Next up, you know the group Italians, Italians do it better. You know the people that brought you Johnny Jewel and Chromatics.
Yes.
Yeah, they have a compilation out. Yeah, they got a compilation album called After Dark 3, and it is a lot of basically synth-pop, dark wave type of shit, you know, on front lip. They got artists like, you know, those two I mentioned, people like Desire, Orion, Gloomy, names I'm just reading out. It is a lot of like, you know, it's that type of vibe you get from them, which if you, you know, you like stuff from those artists, at least the two I just mentioned, yeah, this one's, you get the same vibes from them. So yeah, I say get that a shot. You believe the next one I listen to, I'm gonna fuck her name up too. The girl for that one TikTok song that quick. I can't pronounce her name. Fake It Flowers. That's her album. And all right, it's pretty nice. I consider it like it is in that, you know, in that, you know, very indie pop, well, indie pop type of way. That does hit every now and then. Like, she got a good voice on her. Especially, although considering the fact that I don't think she even liked that song that got her popular. Which I don't blame her for. That song she did was kind of, you know, not that great. Yeah, but this album is, it's pretty good though. There's some tracks I kind of do dug out of here, like. Some tracks like Back to Mars, Sorry, Horan Saracen, damn. And the last one she did, Yoshimi Forest Madeline, it's that very tweet pop type of shit. I liked it. We got two more to talk about. And now for Big Moose Swing, Ghost Man with Anti Icon. I will say, I know it's got styles, you know, very hip hop with a very metal edge to it. That very metal, I want to say Memphis based hip hop type of sound, like that very booming sound, which I do get from this production. And I will say there's a lot more metal than I noticed. This was kind of good too. And I know I said that a lot, but this project is, I can listen to this project. I can definitely say it's listenable. I can definitely fuck with this. And the last one, which I gotta make sure is the last one, so I won't forget shit. Yes. The Gorillaz with Song Machine Season 1, Strange Times. And since we're talking
very about strange times, indeed.
Since we're talking about the tracks that we talked about a lot on Decibel Boost, I'm gonna go to the ones that we haven't talked about because there's a lot. Well, not a lot, but there's 17 tracks. I will say, Valleys of the Pagans with Beck. All right, good song. I like that. Lost Court Legion, my favorite. I like that track a lot. Chalk Table Towels with St. Vincent. Pretty good. Let's see. What else is talking about here? Dead Butterflies with Kano and Oxy and Roxy and Arias. Right. Solid. Opium with Earth Gang. Pretty good. I think like Earth Gang is a feature more than the main artist, to be honest. Maybe because I can't get to the music alone. We can get the music by themselves, but when somebody's like, okay, they're good. Simplicity with Joan as Policewoman. Alright, did it. Severed Head with Goldlink and Unknown Mortal Orchestra. That was good too. I like that one too. With Love to an X with Moonchild. I like that one as well. I basically got the lyric video for it. And of course, MLS with JPEG Mafia and Chai, which honestly, this is the most like the beat sounds like something you wouldn't hear him on. Like it is more lighthearted than most JPEG tracks you usually are. But yeah, this was pretty good too. As a whole, the song machine experience has been one weird experience. Like I will say, as a whole, like it is more it is. And that's kind of more of a world, like, music-wise, it's more worldly. Like, I know, like, Humans is more, I want to say, more hip-hop influence, to be honest. Looking back at it, because, like, here, there's, like, maybe less, maybe, I won't say less, but more of, more, like, hip-hop acts that no one that, that's kind of, you know, maybe not known for everybody, because I know not only everybody, but kind of, like, worldly, and there's more, you know, more world pop acts in here, which, okay, which okay, like, I will say I like it more than the now to be frankly honest, because that one I just forgot quick. But this one's been a wild experience of listening to these songs for most of this year, and yeah, like, whenever season two, whatever T2 coming, I hope this thing does come out well, because I would like to do, let's see, a season two of this. But yeah.
Hell, I heard they're working on a movie finally, so.
Oh, shit.
Who knows?
A Gorillaz movie. I'd love to see that. I'll be good. And that is it. Fuck. I think that's it.
All right.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Good. I need that.
Alright, so, I've got 19 albums that I gotta touch on here, so I'm going to try and, you know, be as efficient as I can. A lot of my top picks are ones that have already been mentioned, so some of those I'll breathe through pretty fast. So, again, top picks, starting at the top, 10 Tricks Point Never, Magic 10 Tricks Point Never. Here we are again with yet another Daniel Lopatin project to discuss, one written and recorded in the midst of all this coronavirus bullshit. Him being on the grind pretty consistently with, like, yearly shit between film scores and albums and stuff since, like, 2017. Of course, his usual penchant for technological nostalgia is what drives this record like many others, this time focusing on the soundscapes of FM radio broadcasts. Because a lot of this sounds like the kind of shit you would hear on, like, FM radio if you're driving out at, like, past midnight and you're just, like, flicking through the dial to find random shit to listen to, most explicitly with the crosstalk interludes, which are directly, like, sampled from, like, archived radio broadcasts. You have a lot of those, like, lush, dense, hazy, crystalline synths known in his style in songs like Alto and Allo and Long Road Home, of course with the latter of those being much more vocally driven and having a nice swinging groove. Of course, much like Aja, vocals do play a prominent role here. Bo Echo kind of sounds like messing around with, like, you know, wires in, like, a weird sound setup. Melodically pitched with a lot of rapid melodic runs playing against swelling synth chords. Of course, the Weather Channel, appropriately enough, sounds like it's drawing from, like, the musical vibes of, like, a radio weather report with additional synths near the end. And similarly, Tales from the Trash Stratum feels like it draws from, like, nature broadcasts and a vibe that kind of sounds like super early OPN, like, first two albums and whatnot. So, yeah, if you like your aesthetic electronic mixed in with a whole lot of nostalgia for weird radio shit that you probably only half remember, there you go. Album number 2, Open Mike Eagle, Anime, Trauma, and Divorce. Once again, at the intersection of hip-hop and weeaboo trash, and yeah, Mike has not been having a great few years. Canceled Comedy Central show, his divorce, of course, everything that's been happening this year. And that's kind of a running theme to this album, just this miserable sense of nihilism and how he often tries to use anime as, like, a coping mechanism, whether directly mentioned in the song itself or just as a reference point. Like, Death Parade, a song basically about, like, as he says, cycles of trauma, you know, not unlike the running motifs of the show itself, with characters reincarnating into new lives and possibly inheriting the trauma of their old lives. Head-ass idiot Shinji, really self-deprecating, you know, and a rather prominent point where he thinks of himself as an asshole for overthinking an attempt at a Peter Dinklage pun. Sweatpants Spider-Man, with him trying to get his life back together following his divorce and stuff, you know, approaching middle age over this really soft, dreamy beat. And of course, that divorce motif shows up again in the song The Black Mirror episode, with the chorus literally saying, "The Black Mirror episode ruined his marriage." He hasn't said which one, although much of the speculation is the season 1 finale, The Entire History in You, which follows a society that offers memory implants that allow you to record everything that happens around you. That's kind of uncomfortable to think about. Of course, the album is really easily his bleakest record, although he does try to find, like, some sort of levity, like with the song Aza's Bop, where it features guest contributions from his own son, and it's basically about how stuff like, you know, anime and, again, his son are helping him to, you know, get through these tough times. And, of course, songs like What the Fuck Is Self-Care, which is the biggest mood, just a song about how, like, bullshit, like, oh, you need to eat healthy, or you need to take bubble baths to self-care of yourself, is, you know, kind of total crap. And, you know, probably the biggest moment of levity being I'm a Joestar, you know, another entry in the proud tradition of rappers finding a sense of empowerment through the realm of anime, and who doesn't love JoJo references and everything? It just makes everything better. So, yeah, there's a really, like, bitter, depressing mood that runs through a lot of this album, but I'm gonna say probably my favorite Open Mic Eagle album so far. It just gives me a lot to chew on. Alright, and now to album number 3, Clipping, Visions of Bodies Being Burned. No surprise, the previous album was my second favorite of 2019, and this is reaching similar heights. I'm not sure if it surpasses RTJ4 for my favorite hip-hop album of the year. We'll have to wait until we get to the year-end list, but it's definitely up there. I mean, it's drawing from pretty much the same songwriting sessions that birthed There Existed in Addiction to Blood, a lot of the same, you know, really dense rhyme schemes and flows, and, you know, those really grating, harsh, creepy production values. Really, of course, the only major difference being that the reference points are drawing from a lot of 90s and even early 2000s horror. You know, Say the Name referencing Candyman, 96 Neve Campbell being an homage to Scream, with David himself sort of playing the role of Ghostface, and Cam and Chyna being the final girls in question. Make Them Dead is built off a lot of, like, harsh static noise with this very slow, deliberate flow depicting, like, this, you know, cult that are just, you know, fucking doing cult shit. Wonder what that could be a reference to. She Bad straight up sounds like Silent Hill music, and we're talking OG PS1 Silent Hill music, with lyrics that convey the vibes of what is essentially an homage to the Blair Witch Project. And I think overall, Pain Every Day is still my favorite track on here, evoking the haunting imagery of ghost revenge narrators in the context of, you know, revenge for lynchings, complete with that Venetian stair-style instrumentation, and that somber violin line near the end still gets me all the time. And yeah, just overall, still on the same level of extremely tight, you know, noise rap songwriting that is just supremely fitting for the season. Alright, the next two are a couple of EPs. So, yeah, Beaver 333, Wrong Generation. Have you been frustrated with how this year's been going on a socio-political front and need some self-righteous rebellion? Then here is the EP for you. Pretty much written in the aftermath of vocalist Jason Butler, you know, spending 2 weeks protesting the death of George Floyd. Of course, a lot of that's channeled in some really furious, potent-ass material, with the opening track, Bite Back, being one of the most furious songs that you're bound to hear in a while. You know, huge riffs, massive-sounding drum grooves, you know, him screaming about the need for complete overturning of white supremacy and the recognition of black humanity. That spoken world buildup just creates a lot of tension for that really explosive outro. Block Is On Fire is arguably one of the more stereotypically nu metal tracks that you can get, mainly focusing on, like, media perception of, like, the Black Lives Matter protests and how they try to manipulate things in their favor. And, of course, you know, cops and their bullshit efforts to disrupt peaceful protests. You Wanted a Fight has really big Rage Against the Machine energy to it, which I'm sure would do the guys in Rage proud. And, yeah, just short, sweet, to the point, pure explosive energy front to back. And, of course, the other EP here being Zeal and Ardor, Wake of a Nation, something that vocalist and founding member Manuel Ganyu felt like he had to do, you know, in the midst of everything going on over this past summer. Hell, the artwork alone pretty much touches on that point and arguably conveys the main motif of Zeal and Ardor's music better than any other they've ever, you know, put for their covers. This being an upside-down cross formed by two, you know, opposing police batons. You know, meshing up the motif of America's fucked up relationship to slavery with, you know, the aesthetics of black metal. The opening vigil paints this very mournful tone with its sorrowful drifting guitars and lyrics that echo the various sentiments and last words of individuals unjustly murdered by police forces. Of course, then you have Tuskegee, which is easily the most evil sounding song on the record, bringing in huge amounts of that menacing black metal groove and double kick, and those just harsh, bitter vocals, appropriate, given that it deals with the harshest subject matter on the record, that being the infamous Tuskegee syphilis study. You know, that one where they fucking gave black people syphilis for really messed up reasons. Of course, at the seams, contrast this mournful piano melody and sung clean vocals against some more bitter, abrasive passages expressing anger and sorrow at what's happened, you know, in the past and what's likely to come in the future. Trust No One is something that he wrote, according to him, just to kind of break up the themes of the album. It's sort of more a generic thing, just, you know, trust no one. And he even said he kind of just wanted a metal song with 808s on there. So, you know, that makes for an interesting break. And overall, this is, you know, a pretty decent carryover, a succinct comment on current events, you know, until whatever that next Zeeland Ardor full length is. Moving on, we have Health, Disco 4, Part 1. And again, I'm really hoping there's a Part 2 because it means we could get more excellent collaborations like the ones here. Yeah, this is another one, those ones kind of like with Gorillaz or Acacia Strain, where it's like they released a bunch of it beforehand, then compiled it into a new release, and one for material. So, Lord knows how much it counts as an album. But what I do know is, of course, everything we've heard still slaps pretty hard. There's, of course, Body Prison with synthwave producer Perturbator, bringing in those kind of really dark cyberpunk vibes that characterize the letters worked through stuttering electronics and hissing audio. Judgment Night providing an appropriately dramatic backdrop for Ghost Mane, of all people, to, you know, moan, howl, and shout all across, especially the repeated declaration of God is a no-show. Full of Health is still one of my absolute favorites, uniting the stomping, you know, noise grind aspects of Full of Hell against the more synthetic soundscapes of, you know, typical Health material. Innocence has a lot of these rapid synthetic D-beats that sound like a take on classic Ministry, along with the grating vocals of Youth Code's Sarah Taylor to help fill things out rather nicely. We do get, of course, a couple previously unheard tracks on here. Power Fantasy melds the ominous, melancholic vibes of Health with the more obnoxious, like, bubblegum glitch and rave stylings of 100 Gex, eventually descending into the kind of weird, kooky, offbeat, you know, weirdness that Gex is known for. And of course, there's even Colors, which features an industrial rock musician named Luis Vasquez, known for his project The Soft Moon, bringing this really moody industrial atmosphere that's like a cross between Chromatics and Three Teeth. And yeah, it all comes together really well. And again, cannot wait for Part 2, Disco 5, or is it going to be Disco 4 Part 2? Who knows? Whatever that next thing could be, after all. And since we're already on the subject of Ghost Mane, might as well delve into Anti-Icon. Yeah, it feels like a good mood for some new Ghost Mane, of course. The first proper track, Vagabond, makes no bones about the aesthetic here, with Ghost Mane rapping about the trauma of his father passing away, yelping and groaning over this industrial trap beat that quickly morphs into a very metalcore-esque outro, delving into the previously released single Lazaretto, which is full-on nu metal, evoking the vibes of, like, self-titled and Iowa-era Slipknot as he, you know, yelps and raps and moans about constantly being on the edge of suicide, setting the tone for easily the most metal record he's done yet, as there's a heavier amount of straight-up instrumentation swapping between that and, you know, the usual buzzy trap beats that he's known for, such as on Sacrilege, which deals with him standing in opposition to everything easily tagged as iconic these days, a sentiment which extends into the track AI, which is of course short for Anti-Icon, but could also mean artificial intelligence because of everything feeling like generated to hell with no real songwriting behind it. I mean, it's a song all about how he's choosing to do a lot of this music for himself and his fans, as opposed to, you know, seeking easy fame or regardless of what, like, any critics might say about him. Funnily enough, while on the subject of Health, Hypochloride feels a lot like a Health song with its instrumental, with Ghost Mane delving further into his issues with drug addiction. And then, of course, the creepiest song on the record, Antisocial Masochistic Rage, not just lyrically over the narrator's being forced into a cage and treated like an abused human pet or something, but the way the song is mixed, a lot of the vocal elements are really deeply up close to your ear, and especially when it gets to the refrain of what sounds like him choking on something, it's, well, pretty much, do you know what the song title abbreviates to? Antisocial Masochistic Rage, ASMR. Is this what ASMR is now? Because if it is, I'm not a fan. So yeah, it's pretty much a Ghost Mane album through and through, with its haunting dark atmospheres and fusing of extreme metal and industrial. focusing more so on the latter, bringing that to the forefront a lot more. But it's, of course, a creepy good time. And speaking of creepy medicine good times, new and on the Throck record and Darkenmint. That sweet, sweet metal extremity needs to go in my veins right now. And it wastes no time with its opening title track, slamming the gas hard on blast beats, D-beats, intense guitar tremolos in both the rhythm and the melody, the vocals swapping back and forth between bellowing growls, soaring shrieks, and some more clean power metal-esque vibes, with the lyrics referencing the world's seeming unfortunate pride and anti-intellectualism. Short, sweet, to the point, fuck you if you think I am wrong, the answers I have are the answers I need. The music overall is pretty consistent from track to track, sticking within that vibe of menacing, suffocating atmospheres with dizzying rhythms and occasional melodic breaks, like in The Age of Starlight Ends, which brings these rapid double kick runs with these sort of hammer-on guitar riffs and tremolos, along with that really menacingly triumphant chorus, let's say, with the lyrics calling out, you know, fascist governments who blindly follow or being blindly followed into pure disaster, referencing, you know, the infamous hollow victory of Commander Pyrrhus. And then, of course, there's the song that the album art that is named after the album artwork, Libidinous, parentheses, a pig with cocks in its eyes. Surprisingly, you will not find that artwork on Spotify. I wonder why. It's got a bit more of a groove to it rather than the full-on furious stomp, but it still is a pretty aggressive banger, criticizing the fetishization of basically reactionary regressive news media. Create art, though the world may perish, draws upon the philosophies of Walter Benjamin to craft a song about the dangers of populism, and of course how it can lead to fascism, like, well, you know, it's almost like there's a theme and a motif here. And, you know, one that mixes potently well, rather, with Annul and the Throck's usual extremities. Pretty much the only other thing I have to say of note is that, compared to the previous records, it feels like there is a bit of a toning down of the industrial elements at play, but which is, for me at least, maybe kind of a shame, because I do like those maddening synthetic elements that make everything sound like mad scientist laboratory shit. But overall, it's still, you know, really gnarly and to the point. And now for a bit of levity to offset all that menace, Mark Rebier, Loop Daddy 3. I only recently got into this guy, but I have seen him float around a lot on the social medias, usually in the context of what's like really shit-posty ass sounding music and visuals, so using this album at least as a baseline to explain what I've been enjoying about his style, which mainly consists of these very repetitious musical loops, usually echoing stylings of like classic funk or Eurodance or even more contemporary electronic, and a lot of it sounds surprisingly legit. Like, if you took out the vocal element, for example, these would be some legit instrumentals. Like, on the first major track, Essential Workers Anthem. Legit sounds great, but it's really tight keyboard and bass grooves and drums. Really, you know, upbeat, dancey, and funky, and a lot of great soulful background vocals. And then to counteract that, you have Mark singing about the importance of essential workers during this entire pandemic. To quote the song directly, "God damn it, this time it really, really sucks, but let me tell you something, you are the best thing about it. You get out there, you risk your ass so that idiots like me can order food and make this stupid bullshit, and for that, god damn it, baby, we love you." Word for word. That alone could sum up the vibe of a lot of the record. You know, as I said, legit music, really shitposty lyrical demeanor. Going on from that theme of essential workers, we have songs like Quarantine Fucking Tonight, this legitimately slow, seductive kind of R&B rhythm, where he's talking about, you know, having sex during quarantine in a decidedly unsexy fashion. There's the upbeat Eurodance vibes of Throw That Shit Out, while the similarly dancey Internet Dreams has Mark scatting over top and improvising stuff about, like, fucking taking his shirt off on the internet and filming it, because, I mean, that is a thing he does a lot, either filming shirtless or in bathrobes. I mean, hey, it's his life. Do what he wants, I guess. There's even some modern-day trap vibes on here, like with the song I'm a Flamingo, with a lot of these deep reverberating bass drops and, you know, kind of tinny-sounding percussion, soundtracking him role-playing a flamingo, attacking and eating people randomly. And then, of course, the buzzy, squealing vibes of songs like Dinner's Ready. And, you know, with how serious and fucking obnoxious, awful everything has been this year, this is one of those albums that gives me a good laugh and is honestly really fucking catchy on the beat side of things. I don't know how to feel about it, but yeah, I salute you, Mr. Anthony Fantano impersonator. Seriously, this guy looks like Fantano with hair. Moving on from that, we of course have one of the major solo debuts from a metal, you know, front man this year, Greg Pucciato with Child Soldier, Creator of God, an album that was forced into an early release from its original scheduled date because, per Pucciato's words, some asshole reviewer decided to leak it online ahead of time. Bastards. So anyway, what kind of vibes can you expect from Greg going solo? Well, things are set up really well with the pseudo-title track that opens things up, training on this really haunting ambient vibes, bolstered by percussion that is, you know, on his usual electronic, because he does have electronic stuff that he works on sometimes, and this feels vaguely kind of Autechre-ish, Autechre I've been getting into recently, with Greg, of course, singing very softly and melodically over top. You get similar electronic vibes through songs like the ballad-esque Temporary Object, arguably the poppiest song on the record, the pseudo-synthwave ambience of Fireflies, and of course the relatively gentle vibes of Through the Walls, which also have touches of 80s soft rock in there. And then on the other side of things, you have songs like Fire for Water, which contrasts those vibes with this really pummeling, aggressive drum rhythm and really filthy, like, low-end driven bass line, letting him moan and scream and before settling into this off-kilter, Dillinger-esque, mathy groove. Tracks like Do You Need Me to Remind You, which have these slow, sludgy, dramatic grooves thrown into the mix, and the similarly aggressive Roach Hiss, which pounds away with, well, this kind of hissing guitar rhythm and buzzy bass line, with Greg's vocals cutting and shredding through the mix as to be expected. Then you have songs like Down When I'm Not, which, okay, I'm not sure it fully fits the easy core definition, as it were, but it feels like it's writing a similar vibe, as the drum beat is very saturated in production, but it's very upbeat in a hardcore-esque way, but it's also got a lot of these soaring major key guitar melodies that are very pleasant in a way, almost like, it kind of sounds like if John Hughes was a big fan of The Armed. I don't know how that would work on a chronological scale, but just take my word for it. And then you have You Know I Do, which kind of feels like it's taking from the more gentle side of, like, the Deftones catalog. You know, they're more melodic tracks, as it were. The album definitely wears a lot of these influences on its sleeve, but Greg obviously knows how to work them into a really dynamic mix of melodic, upbeat, heavy, menacing, and generally melancholic. It's got a lot going on to it. It's a very varied, interesting release. Alright, moving on to the new Pallbearer album, Forgotten Days. Always in the mood for some good sludge doom from these guys, who've been consistently putting out some really good shit in the genre. And of course, the album opener, the title track, sets a nice tone with this really menacing demeanor conveyed through amp feedback and those really buzzy riffs, meshing well with the slow tempo and, as we mentioned, the kind of Sabbath-esque lyrical subject matter of its narrator going insane and losing its grip on reality. Of course, then you get the song Riverbed, which settles into this more common vibe for the band, you know, switching between the low sludgy riffs and its more pleasing, sort of grungy, clean melodies, all excellently composed to be very melancholic and sorrowful. Silver Wings, which is the longest track on the album at 12 minutes, knows how to use that time rather well, you know, building and swaying through its various segments, the intro vamping on this rumbling drum buildup, with, of course, some offbeat cymbal fills in there. While the guitars build these buzzy low-end walls to support the, you know, guitar melodies, that melodic chord progression, going into some pure, clean, slow melodies before switching into these really grand, huge-sounding halftime rhythms, leaving room for soaring guitar solos. Then you have probably the most pure, heavy song on the album, The Quicksand of Existing, really cranking up the low end of the production to high, focusing on a steady groove that's, you know, just really heavy and stuff, and yeah, overall, it's everything you expect out of a Pallbearer record, with its sludgy atmospheres, melancholic somber melodies, fusing together into these huge soundscapes bolstered by really excellent production. And while on the subject of sludge and doom, this new collaboration record between Emma Ruth Rundle and Thou, May Our Chambers Be Full, the third time that Thou has ever done a collaborative release following an EP and a full length with their fellow extreme metal act, The Body. This time, they're linking up with, as we mentioned, Emma Ruth Rundle, post-rock, kind of folkish singer-songwriter, who, yeah, this album is pretty succinct, you know, 7 tracks, 36 minutes, the opening track, Killing Floor, shows exactly how their presences, like, meld together, with Emma's more soft-spoken vocals blending in well with the down-tempo, sludgy instrumentation in a way that feels very grungy, which is something that, you know, Thou has been known to dabble in on releases like Rhea Sylvia. And then, of course, once Brian Funk's vocals kick in, that's when the really, really heavy stuff kicks in. Between these two styles going on, you know, the kind of somber post-rock and the sludge doom, they know how to blend and play off each other really well. Out of Existence allows Emma's vocals to ride really melancholic vibes before the song swings immediately into heavy mode, only to then swerve into more post-metal territory with the guitars vibe on another grunge melody before letting the sludge build up again, this time with Emma's vocals at play. Ancestral Recall, which was one of the first released songs, definitely brings a lot more of the heavy in between the post-rock, being a bit more up-tempo than the rest of the record, with even the drums bringing this rolling tom fill in between all the heavier parts. And then Magical Cause, interestingly enough, allows the two vocal styles, Emma and Brian, to play well off each other, where, you know, they're either singing back and forth or directly at the same time in between, you know, all the really heavy parts and everything. So, yeah, sludgy, grungy, downbeat, melodic, heavy, sneezy, doc. It's a lot of things, but it's still overall some good shit. And then the last of my top picks here being, of course, Gorillaz' Song Machine Season 1, Strange Times. So, third album overall since they got put together those years ago. Although I guess how you qualify this as a release is still weird to me because of the way it was released and all that. But either way you slice it, having vibed with a lot of the pre-release songs and hearing them in full context with the unheard tracks, honestly, this is probably the best thing they've released since getting back together. You know, opening up with Strange Times with such a nice tone, those warbled spacey piano melodies, and Robert Smith's wailing vocals playing into a song where Damon Albarn vents about the chaos of the past several years. Going into the first of the unheard of tracks, Valley of Pagans, which has a psychedelic dance pop rock vibe that fits well with Beck's more contemporary style. Pretty catchy overall. The Lost Chord has a lot of psychedelic synths and lush breezy funkiness along with some great vocals by Lee John, which when combined with tracks like, say, Pac-Man, which has really tight, you know, kind of hip-hop funk grooves and that great Schoolboy Q verse, the album as a whole, with tracks like that, kind of evokes a lot of Plastic Beach era vibes, which is probably why, you know, I'm vibing so well with this, because that was a great goddamn album. Of course, we already talked about Aries, following that kind of, again, John Hughes 80s pop new wave rock aesthetic, and it sounds really gorgeous. Delving into some of the deluxe edition material, you have Opium, this really nice spacey R&B funky vibe bolstered by the really great guest vocals of Earth Gang. Simplicity, which is really breezy and has nice tropical flavor and some great guest vocals from Joan as Policewoman. And of course, MLS, which has this kind of quirky synth pop vibe from a Japanese band called Chai to, you know, contrast against the bars from JPEG Mafia, where he's just flexing about the rest of this generation's music artists having zero integrity and no talent, flexing like he does best. I think what works best about this record overall is that it feels like Albarn has much more of a presence here instead of, like, sinking into the background. He does a lot better job fusing here with his collaborators at play and them working well off each other instead of one necessarily overtaking the other a lot. It all works really well. It's a well-balanced record and just a good time overall. And now with that out of the way, time to delve into the quick round, ones that I don't have much else to add, so let's go. Mets, Atlas Vending, still has a lot of that great punk-heavy noise rock energy of previous albums, and while a lot of that buzzy guitar twang is still in place, the production doesn't feel as saturated, with maybe a bit more breathing room for, like, more melody and stuff here and there. Machine Drums of U of U, some of the coolest beats I've heard on any record this year, from, like, those more dense, bass-heavy songs with a lot of skittering percussion. So, of course, the classic lush vibes of stuff like Cane Train. A lot of it is just really fantastic to vibe to overall. Mr. Bungle, the Raging Wrath of the Easter Bunny demo. On its own, it's a pretty solid thrash album. taking into account its own merits. I mean, you have two titans of the genre on drums and guitar, so, you know, that's to be expected. But considering the avant-garde wackiness of previous Mr. Bungle releases like, say, California, this kind of feels like maybe a letdown if you were expecting something truly off the wall. Sumac, May You Be Held. This album, of course, being held off of Spotify because hashtag Daniel Ek is a chode. This was recorded over like 3 years, apparently, 2017 to 2019. So they were working on this even between stuff like their Keiji Haino collaboration albums and 2018's Love and Shadow. Much like that album, this one is very spacious and drone-heavy, with a lot of this dark ambience in between, like, the improvisational post-sludge and, you know, the passages of guitar feedback. There's not much to add to this. It sounds, you know, in the vein of previous Sumac records. I'd say it's about on par with Love and Shadow, although, given how much good shit there's been this year, I'm still debating a potential top point on the album of the year list for this record. I know Sumac made it in 2018, but, you know, a lot of stuff to consider. Bring Me the Horizon, Post-Human Survival Horror. Now, I want to clarify something here for the record. I do have something of a past with this band as far as following them since 2010. First record I ever heard from them was their third album, There Is a Hell. That's the short version of the title, which I actually think is a great record. Hell, it's their best record. I honestly can't really vibe with Count Your Blessings or Suicide Season. And the thing is, There Is a Hell is actually a pretty poppy record, all things considered. But it was a really great fusion of, you know, synthetic, you know, kind of pop-ish tendencies with, you know, more contemporary, cutting, hard, metalcore songwriting. It was really great, and I just felt like no other album after that ever managed to match that, even as they were sinking harder and harder into, well, Imagine Dragons territory. They're working with fucking Halsey now, goddamn. And that's where my frustration is, not necessarily because they changed, but because I know they can do better in the realm of fusing metal with more poppy instincts, and they just keep not doing it. That being said, Post-Human Survival Horror is the closest they've kind of gotten to capturing that magic in a while. Of course, naturally, the Baby Metal collaboration is the best fucking part, because it is another earworm on the level of Da Da Dance, which means it haunts my nightmares every fucking second. Of course, it's probably the Mick Gordon collaboration, because he knows how to do metal and synth stuff, so his instincts are no doubt helping, you know, prop up better parts of this record. There's still obviously some annoyances, though. I cannot stand the sound of Youngblood's voice, god fucking damn it. But the good songs that are on this release are really good. Kinda makes me nervous about what they're doing with the next projects, because if this turns out to be a fluke, then I'm gonna be kinda mad. And then, of course, the last of the quick round being Corey Taylor with CMFT. I mean, to be fair, knowing the kind of music he generally talks about being into, this is about what I expected. It's just like amped up contemporary versions of like classic hard rock and roll with some dashes of country twang in there. CMFT Must Be Stopped is still a pretty fun over-the-top banger, and honestly my favorite track that's not a single would be Mina Lux, mostly because it's got big Van Halen energy to it. It kind of feels like an attempt at Hot for Teacher Part 2, but with more country swagger. But I mean, yeah, it's just kind of a straightforward rock record, all things considered. It's not as out there and experimental as something like the Greg Pucciato record. And now, for something I feel like I haven't done in a while, least not since Green Day. All right, children, let me tell you a story. A long time ago, there was a band formed called Cannibal Corpse. They released a solid handful of albums in their early days that became incredibly seminal and influential to this new up-and-coming genre called death metal, with them gaining quite a lot of prominence as early pioneers, and especially thanks to a choice feature in media such as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, for example. And they went along releasing some pretty classic material in those first several albums, but then their original vocalist left, a man by the name of Chris Barnes, who was fired for reasons, and then went on to form a new project, one called 6 Feet Under, which obviously rose to some level of prominence off of just the prestige of a former Cannibal Corpse Association. And then quickly, well, maybe not quickly, but over time, they developed into one of the biggest laughing stocks of the genre. Now, I'll admit, I've only heard individual songs from them here and there, never a full album, but I'm very much aware of their reputation. Kinda hard not to be when one of your most infamous songs is a god-awful cover of AC/DC's TNT. Doubly so when you decide it's a good idea to make an entire album of Iron Maiden covers that, from all accounts and everything I've heard, is several different kinds of awful and should probably be considered a crime against humanity, because it's one thing to write your own bad music, but it's something else to desecrate the legacy of one of the most seminal and influential metal bands of all time. It's like the equivalent of those Spanish art restorations. At least from what I've heard. Like I said, never sat through a full album from them. Until this new project of theirs, Nightmares of the Decomposed.
I've been waiting for this all month.
So here I am, listening to this album, and holy shit. I'll just cut to the chase here. There's no reason to beat about the bush. Y'all weren't kidding. Chris Barnes these days really cannot do vocals for shit. And it's almost embarrassing to think, like, how does the man who was involved in the recording of classic albums like Tomb of the Mutilated resort to this? The man responsible for Hammer Smash Face turns in this shit, and has apparently been turning in shit like this for who knows how many years at this point. I don't know exactly when he stopped being able to scream, but holy shit, the vocals on this album are fucking pathetic. They are up there with that fucking Tala song for the worst vocal performance I've heard all year. And when I... just to put this as clear as I can, I've heard a lot of people joke about Chris Barnes' vocals being like the Cookie Monster, and I thought that was an exaggeration because people always make that joke about death metal vocalists, but holy wow. He really, like, literally, no joke, sounds like the Cookie Monster. Or, if you need another frame of comparison, he sounds like he's doing a really shitty, Strong Bad impression. Just picture that voice. Picture that voice in your head. Picture that overtop grooving death metal. Alex, does Strong Bad have a rule against bullshit like this?
Not that I'm aware of. At least not directly.
Well, maybe there should be. And there's no way to describe it other than his vocals are just this really dry ass sounding like bark with no power or force to it at all. And I know for some people who are like, well, I don't know, doesn't all metal sound like that? Like, if you don't listen to a lot of metal, maybe that's an understandable perspective. I mean, if you don't know a lot about the genre, a lot of it'll sound the same. So let me try to clarify, like, we who listen to a lot of metal, we can tell when a vocalist has it and when they don't. Like, especially in the extreme ends of things, when a vocalist is legit and when they aren't. So, let's take, for reference point, Corpse Grinder, the band who took over for Cannibal Corpse after Chris Barnes was, summarily departed from the band. That man, still, to this day, has some pretty furious power to his vocals. It sounds just absolutely gargantuan in nature. Though, to be fair, it has been some time since Cannibal Corpse put out a new album, although to also be fair, there was that really great guest feature on that new Igor album. By the way, that album still slaps and that song is still great. So let's maybe go to a more relevant example. Going to this pin that I had stuck in here since the last album roundup, Napalm Death. Their most recent album, Throes of Joy in the Jaws of Defeatism. This being a band that has been in the game for, I'm pretty sure, at least 30 years, and Barney Greenway has been in the game for at least 30 years. You'll hear that album, and it sounds like he hasn't skipped a beat. His vocals they fucking hit hard. They have fucking just intense cutting energy to them, man. As someone who has in fact seen Napalm Death live, I can tell you it's not a fluke. It is legit. When I hear someone like Barney Greenway screaming his way through a Napalm Death record, I hear the vocals of a savage beast. When I hear Chris Barnes' sad, sorry-ass attempt at vocals on here, I just hear a sick dog that really needs to be put down. And it doesn't help when you have songs like Zodiac that have several pauses in the instrumentation that allow for the pure vocal shittiness to just shine through unfiltered. And don't even get me started on his attempts at pig squeals. The second that shit hits you in the opening of a song like The Rotting, it sounds like an actual literal pig, except, fuck, actual pig squealers try harder than this. It is literal diarrhea out of the mouth, and it's not just that the tone of his voice is bad. I'm pretty sure his actual vocal rhythms are just sloppy as hell. Like, they can't even ride any sort of precision with the rhythm. And again, going to Corpse Grinder, that man can belt out vocals pretty fast and powerful. But this shit, like, even if it's, like, fucking, the way he screams the chorus of Drink Blood, Get High, it's like Vanilla Ice levels of not even trying to be remotely on beat. And, oh god, there is just so much cringe here. It's like, at this one, you might even be wondering, like, I don't know, well, what about the actual instrumentation? Maybe that's decent, but, like, honestly, what is there to say about the music here? It is just the most bog-standard, nothing-special, groove-heavy, old-school death metal you can get. The songwriting is just lame. It plays everything really safe, which, even then, there is no excuse for this, since similarly styled old-school death metal bands like, say, Obituary are still around doing the same basic shit a million times better. And with a vocalist that, once again, has some actual bite to his performances. It's like, holy shit, this thing is a goddamn disaster top to bottom. So much so, I am honestly, I can't tell if this or Green Day's Father of All Motherfuckers is worse. That is, they're both shit records, but in, like, vastly different ways. Like, okay, fucking Father of All was just, like, a baffling, I have no fucking idea who the hell this is supposed to be for. I at least kind of get who this is supposed to be for, but it is just so fucking incompetent top to bottom. It's like, I can't, but it's like, okay, we always put a playlist in the description of these episodes, whether it's the weekly episodes or the album roundups, the album roundups being Spotify playlists. And while we do normally put in the songs from, like, the albums we think most highly of, yeah, that's pretty much it. We do that, and we skip over, like, the garbage. I am so tempted to throw a couple of songs from that album into this month's playlist, because I need you to understand just what the fuck I forced myself to listen to.
Okay, I think I have a good way to figure out which one is worse. Which one's worse? On a scale of 1 to Broken Side.
Oh god, I'm not sure anything as bad as Broken Side. But, like, I guess, I don't know, I'll admit I never had much of an attachment to Green Day in the broad scope of things, but classic Cannibal Corpse, at the very least, I do enjoy. And, you know, modern Cannibal Corpse too, which is, in retrospect, proving to be way better. It's just, this is just, like, how do you go from being a seminal figure in helping found an entire genre to this bullshit?
The answer? Drugs. Lots and lots of drugs.
Yeah, with fucking Chris Barnes, you know, fucking dreads looking like they're made of hemp. Ugh. So, yeah, this album sucks. if I were to give it a double toasted style rating, it would be a fuck you. And, oh God, hopefully I don't have to fucking hear anything this fuck awful ever again. I'm not sure I will. Like, if something worse crops up in the next month or so, I think I'm going to go insane. But anyway, that wraps up all my shit, and that brings us to the end of the album roundup. As, of course, as previously mentioned, if anything we talked about catches your fancy, there will be the Spotify playlist in the description. You know, carry that around with you in your pocket wherever you go. And as always, be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealRezzo, like us on Facebook, subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes, visit SurrealResolution.com, shout out to the producer Mr. E for the music for this podcast, links to his shit in the description, all that good shit. So, yeah, we're approaching 2 hours of this. Told you it was gonna be a long one. But thank you for listening. We'll, of course, be back with the usual weekly episodes. And at some point, of course, there will be the year-end album spectaculars. Because those are always fun, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a lot to work through. And one particular album that will be nowhere near in consideration. You can probably guess which one. But until then, thank you for listening. And have a good rest of your month.